15. Splitting from Carol. Truth be told, I knew it was probably curtains for me and Carol in 1989, when I asked her to act more demurely at a Radio Norwich summer roadshow, and she responded by downing her glass of wine and getting another one. You don't piss about with a guy's career like that. We lasted another 6 years, 6 years for which my money were among the happiest times of my life, and while I'm certainly not angling for a reconciliation with a woman like Carol, stranger things have happened. I believe there are few things that can't be sorted out over a coffee and a cuddle, and I'm not saying I want her to at all, but if she ever did have the guts to pick up the phone and admit she was wrong and leaving her new lover, and would I consider giving it another go, I'd be polite enough to give the idea proper consideration on the strict proviso that the possessions of mine that I surrendered during the divorce were returned to me and that sexual intercourse with other men was knocked on the head. I first got wind of Carol's infidelity when she came home from the gym wearing a pair of black Asics cycling shorts after having gone out wearing a blue Adidas pair. Also, the Asics pair were for men. Suddenly, things that had seemed innocent, the snazzy new hairdo, the packet of condoms in her glove box, reported sightings of her in nightclubs with a man, started to collect in my craw. What was she up to? I began to keep a diary. I publish it below only to demonstrate how in the right I was. 21st of August, 1995. Carol's acting suspiciously again. Can't explain why, but if you could see it, you'd agree. 24th of August, 1995. Carol's bought a new dress. No sign of it on any bank statements. A gift from a lover? Just realised she could have used cash. 30th of August, 1995. Carol smells of a new aftershave. Lom, I think. But I'm still using a giant bottle of Pagan Man. It was an ex-display model off a ferry. Enough evidence to confront? 31st of August, 1995. Didn't confront. 6th of Sept, 95. Carol's brother turns up and tells me she's seeing another man. Reluctantly discredit his testimony on the grounds that he's a former alcoholic and current weed junkie. 21st of September, 95. Carol now staying at the gym 2 nights a week, in order to be first on the cross trainer. Suspect that's a lie. I put in a call, false voice, to all local hotels to check she's not staying there. 4th of October, 95. Park up outside the gym and watch Carol enter. She stays until 8 a.m. the next day. Thank God, she is staying at the gym. 26th of October, 95. Carol 40% less randy than this time last year. Menopause or sourcing sex from an alternative supplier? 8th of November, 95. Found men's pants in the back of the Micra. Gotcha. 8th of November, 1995. Actually, what if this is a gotcha? Edmonds can be one sick bastard, and I do have the profile to be the subject of a BBC One Saturday night prank. 9th of November, 95. Realised they were my pants. Relieved / disappointed. 15th of November, 95. Had a succession of calls to the house. Whenever I answer, the caller hangs up, even when I impersonate Carol. December the 1st, 1995. Heard Carol on the phone saying, "That was great sex last night." Oh, this is so confusing. I spent several sleepless hours that night constructing rational explanations for this sentence. Perhaps she'd caught the tail end of a blue movie on Channel 4 and was chatting to a girlfriend about it. Perhaps she'd said sects in reference to some pseudo-religious team version of step aerobics. Perhaps it was someone's name, Jim Great Sex. Perhaps she was trying to say Great Six in a Scottish accent. Come sunrise, I'd convinced myself of all these things. 8th of December, 95, struggling to find a spare moment to confront Carol. She's always at the ruddy gym. 15th of December, 95, got drunk and tried it on with Sue Cook. She was so understanding, though witheringly emphatic in her rebuttal. December the 21st, 95, had a long chat with Bill Oddie, an experienced birder. He's lent me his binoculars and given me some great advice on how to remain still for long periods of time and go completely undetected in undergrowth and shrubbery. It's surprising how many of these techniques can be used to track an enemy or errant spouse. 22nd of December, 1995. Called in sick to Pear Tree, told Carol I was off to the office, then set up a vantage point opposite the house. Binoculared her entering the premises with a man, then shutting the bedroom curtains. Decide to stop keeping a diary now. I'm not an idiot. Yes. It seems the French-smelling sex provider was Carol's fitness instructor. Far from being French, he was actually from Luton. His only Frenchness was his cowardly duplicitousness and the kissing he did with my wife. French kissing is a technique in which two mouths dock at the lips, creating a closed arena for intermittent insertions and exploratory recces of the tongue, interspersed with quick prods, darts, scoops and jabs. I was waiting for Carol when she got back from the gym that evening. She breezed into the kitchen as I sat at the kitchen table with a bottle of wine. I hadn't drunk from or opened it. Drinking during the day makes me nauseous. But I think the effect worked. "Been enjoying yourself?" I said, but with loads of emphasis, so it was clear that enjoying might have a double meaning. "Mm-hmm," she said, like she didn't have a bloody clue. "Have a nice time at the gym," I said, making inverted commas around the word gym with my fingers. "Yes," she said. Her knowledge of mimed punctuation was pitiful. "Have a good workout," I said, slotting my right forefinger in and out of a hole I'd made between the thumb and forefinger of my left hand. "Yes," she said, not a flicker. Who doesn't understand the finger sex mime, for goodness sake? I lost it, throwing my empty wine glass crashing to the floor, but it landed on the carpet of the hall in one piece. "Careful," she said, suddenly irritated. "You nearly broke that." "What, like you broke my heart?" Silence. I was particularly pleased with this line because it's the sort of thing I'd usually think of long, long afterwards and then admonish myself for not having come up with it at the time. "I know, Carol. I know." But then she turned to face me and looked so sad that I started to cry on her behalf and then on my behalf, and then I didn't know on whose behalf I was crying on because I was making a right mess. I had a cold at the same time, so it was like a mucal tsunami. She picked up the wine glass and handed it to me so I could have another go, and this time it clattered onto the liner where the stem snapped. Still not the smithereen effect I wanted, but better than before. "Thanks," I said. Then she led me out into the garden and explained that she'd been having an affair with her gym instructor. I asked all the obvious questions. Since when? Why him? How can you be attracted to a man who basically wears leotards? She told me all about him, including his name, which I'm not going to publish here. Eventually, after lots of crying, me, shouting, me, and sighing, both, we went back inside. We realized that the next-door neighbors were having pre-Christmas drinks and could hear everything. "Enjoying this, are you?" I shouted through the hedge. "You like a bit of grief with your mulled wine," I thought afterwards. I explained to Carol that I'd forgive her. We'd try again in the morning. Perhaps go and talk to Sue Cook about it. But she was shaking her head. I began frantically pitching shows at her, desperately outlining my portfolio of program ideas in the hope of convincing her that we could be happy and rich. But she just kept shaking her head. The doorbell went. Bill Oddie was standing there. I opened the door to him and was just saying, "This isn't a good time, Bill," when he saw Carol. He could see I'd been crying and was clearly doing the mental maths. No one spoke for a while. And then Carol gathered up her things, brushed past us, and headed back to the Micra. She turned the ignition, and a blast of the Winner Takes It All came through the speakers before she could switch it off. I began to cry, and she looked at me through the windscreen and reversed very proficiently onto the road. We watched her go until she disappeared round the corner, at which point we stopped watching. I noticed Oddie was still standing there. "Not a good time, Bill." "Yeah, I know," he said. "I just wanted my binoculars back." I want to be fair to Carol. Yes, she's mind-blowingly selfish. Yes, she takes grumpiness to a staggering new level. Yes, she's manifestly not as clever as me. But she does have good points. On French holidays, she took to right-hand driving with real panache. She also makes relatively decent meatballs. That pretty much covers it. Carol left me 14 months after the last of my TV chat shows. I wasn't in a good place, the back garden usually, and she'd found it difficult to offer the right support. But I can't speak for Carol, nor would I want to. Only she knows why she wanted our marriage to end, so she's very kindly outlined in her own words what went wrong. Over to you, Carol. I loved Alan and probably didn't fully appreciate what I had. He was working hard to provide for me and the kids, and I probably took that for granted. He was away from home more than I'd have liked, but I acknowledged that Pear Tree Productions needed him, and he had a career on the telly. You can't do that if you're swanning around at home, for crying out loud. He'd been working long hours trying to resuscitate his production company, his mind forever racing with new ideas and formats. Every now and then in front of guests, I'd laugh at the sheer inventiveness of them all. But yes, Alan's career hiccup hit me hard. I'd invested a great deal of hope in Alan being a fixture on mainstream TV for years and years to come. God knows he deserved it, and was and is a damn sight more of a talent than the likes of Tony Robinson or Andy Marr. When his show hit a few snags and he was hung out to dry by the BBC, I began to realise that my dreams of being on the arm of a BBC mainstay were fading. I mean, he'd come back stronger, that was never in any real doubt, but I was impatient and wanted all the rewards that he'd promised me. Hurt, upset, and I guess a bit too moody about the whole thing, I took to visiting the gym. I suggested that Alan come too, but after every unreturned phone call to the BBC, he'd dig an angry hole in the garden, and so any spare energy went on that. Besides, he was already in pretty good shape. At the gym, I met a personal trainer. He was young, physically in peak condition, no arguments about that, fair dues, some people have a lot of time on their hands, and didn't stretch me intellectually, which did my confidence the world of good. In a clear contravention of my marital vows, I began sleeping with the guy. God knows how Alan feels about that. I never stopped to ask his permission or run the idea by him. This carried on for an indeterminate amount of time. I then split with Alan, who hadn't been having an affair. Not because he couldn't, he could. He was a well-regarded TV personality. You think he was short of offers? Dream on. But he exercised self-restraint. What can I say? That's Al. Alan wasn't perfect. There were a couple of minor niggles, which I won't bore you with now. It wasn't anything significant, and it was certainly not in the bedroom department, a room where, to be honest, he played a blinder. So that's my story. It's the tale of stubbornness, broken promises, broken dreams, and I have to admit, my own shortcomings as a spouse. I'll now hand you back to Alan.
Thanks, Carol. Appreciate that. Carol scotched the idea of reconciliation and said we were splitting up for good in 1996, and I, of course, demanded sole custody of the children. Fernando wasn't keen as he was living in Cambridge midway through the final year of a politics degree, while Denise was living in Ipswich with an art collective. I consulted a lawyer nonetheless, and he advised me not to pursue it. The law always takes the side of the woman.